Okay, this is a session with Bob and Carolyn in the background. Depending on her input, she has to go away at some point in the next hour. So this is being recorded on June 6th, 2019, and we're starting at 12:37 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon.
Okay, so this is a special topic. To vote Trump. Now, there's this person, Michael Wolff, who wrote a book within a year of the first term of Trump, and it was called Fire and Fury, and he claimed that he was able to sit in the White House like a fly in the wall in a certain room on a couch, and he talked to people as they passed by, and he gathered all this stuff, and he exposed a lot. He even said things like Melania cried when Trump won because she thought he would lose and didn't think she didn't want to be in the White House. So there was a lot of stuff, and it was a scandalous book because he couldn't really back up what he was saying. And so people who wanted to hate Trump loved the book, and it was a big bestseller, and those that were supposedly responsible journalists ignored it. So he, meanwhile, has made a follow-up book, and a journalist I like to read, who's not bad, Matt Taibbi, reviews it. And I want to go through the review, and he does a good job picking out the relevant points, and he's not that impressed with the book, but he says it's an interesting read. So we're going to go through and have Ion comment where Ion can about the relative veracity of these points.
Just have you get your points up and let's go. We're good. We got this, Bob. Let's go.
Right. Now, I've met both Michael Wolff. I met him once in New York City, and I met Matt Taibbi once. So I know these guys. So here we go. The title by Matt Taibbi is Michael Wolff's Siege. That's the new book, Siege. First one was Fire and Fury. Is like his last book, but worse. Okay.
Yeah.
Then he says, the wannabe, Matt Taibbi says about Michael Wolff, the wannabe Woodward of the Trump era goes for another quick buck. Okay, so I'm just going to start reading what is written, and then you can interrupt any point. He starts off, Michael Wolff might be the most unreliable historian America has ever encountered, but at least
well,
he admits
he's not
it.
He's not a historian. Yeah, that's what he would admit. He's not a historian. He's just a position. Look, let's give you a little, before you get too that far down the rabbit hole, it's too many words, Bob, too many words. Let's clean this up a little bit. What happened is he just found a way that the emperor was interesting. It's not that he's clothed or naked. The emperor is interesting. That's where it came from. No one wrote books about Roosevelt because he wasn't interesting. They wrote books about your little buddy Churchill because he was a drunk. And he was an infidel, and he ran around building walls all the time. But yet he was interesting because he could stand in the gap, the V, as it were.
Yes.
He can stand in the gap, okay? This cat is doing nothing other than that ridiculous person who moved into next door to Sarah Palin in Wasilla, Alaska, to spy on her and her oligarchs, her quote-quote Mutt and Jeff and Jip and Jap and Ted and Todd and Kitty and Tim and Ty and Toe and all those other ridiculous Palin children, or this little thing of Kate and her eight people who live with her, to the point that it's just an invasion. And the stuff isn't even based on anything. It's beyond outside of credibility, but it hits the zeitgeist of this, like you said. If they love Trump, they love hating this book, and vice versa.
Okay, so he says Michael Wolff might be the most unreliable historian America's ever encountered, but at least he admits it. This is, and he gives a quote from the new book, The Author's Note to Siege, the less explosive sequel to his smash hit inside account of the Trump presidency, Fire and Fury. So the quote is from Michael, dealing with sources in the Trump White House has continued to offer its own set of unique issues. A basic requirement of working there is surely the willingness to delegitimize the truth. So if you're going to work for Trump, you're going to be prepared to lie. This has caused some of the same people who've undermined the public trust to become private truth tellers. Interviewing such Janus-based...
Now, stop right there.
Yeah.
What do you call a private truth teller, Bob? What would you say? If you described a private truth teller, what would that be? Is that
That would be the, they don't mind gossiping and betraying Trump privately.
Head of Hopper.
Oh, okay.
Head of Hopper.
Not Walter Winchell?
No, not Walter Winchell. He was trying to undo the war. Head of Hopper was trying to get the scoop.
Right.
Head of Hopper. Head of Hopper. And who is the guy? Take it off. Kill the bitch. Kill the bitch. Kill the bitch. Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer.
Oh, yeah, Jerry Springer. Right. Okay, so this has caused some of the same people who have undermined the public trust by supposedly lying on behalf of Trump to become private truth tellers. Interviewing such Janus-faced, that means two-faced sources, creates a dilemma, for it requires depending on people who lie to also tell the truth, and who also might later disavow the truth they have told. So that's the quote, and Tybee says, Michael Wolff is fully aware of his situation. But then Tybee says the translation of what Michael said is, quote, a lot of my sources are proven liars, and I knew this going into the project, but have reported what they said anyway as truth. And if they later say I've misquoted them, well, they're liars, unquote. So, from your knowing, did Wolf misquote people in his book, first book, Fire and Fury?
Yes, he did. He would take references. Somebody would ask him something, some question. Okay, and they would ask, good morning, how are you today? I'm fine. Okay, this person from the White House has described the fine mess that everything is in the White House.
Yeah.
And that they did say the word fine. They did. So that's true.
Right, you're talking about Michael described the fine mess, or the person that he talked to in the morning, a staff member.
He quips that they said, good morning, how are you? I'm fine. He then takes that into the person from the White House said it was a fine mess, he said. When all they did say the word fine, they said the word fine, which is true, but all the stuff that they added to it was his own hyperbole.
Oh, really? And why did he think he could get away with that?
He did, because so many people hate Trump, they didn't care.
Right.
They don't care what it is. They just hate Trump. They just hate
Trump.
They hate, even when he does good, he's given all the people who've made the most money on Donald J. Trump are the ones who hate him the most.
Right.
They actually getting up enough of money to do something, you see. they made the communist Bernie Sanders a millionaire. How you got a millionaire communist that sitting to run for president with his 9 houses and his 47 book deals and money stacked up everywhere? And he says, well, things cost some money these days. And if you write a book, then sometimes, and he combs his hair with a balloon and waving his arms and all this kind of stuff. And you're like, you've got to be kidding. We've made the communist millionaires now? Boy, this is pretty good. The millionaire communist club, the He-Man woman haters club that won't let rich people in the country, you're going to make him be the president of it. That's great. That's great. $20 at a time. Just $20 at a time. Okay, that's an example of this ridiculousness, too. That's an example of it. Because it's like, what? What do you call a Democrat socialist? Is that like a white nigger or a black Jew or up downer or a jive hippie punk ass? I mean, it's a drag queen that's drugged, a drugging drag queen that got drugged, that's an LGBTQRSTSUXYV and everything else that applies, that represents the missionary Judeo-Christian values of today's liberal union. And you're kind of going, what the heck? How do you get there from here? You just can't quite achieve it. So it becomes contrived hyperbole. That would be nice adverbial.
Okay, so let's
add to that.
Okay, that's a good answer. Now, so then Matt Tybee says, Michael Wolff is the perfect biographer for the Trump era. He tells you it's nearly impossible to try to sort out what is and isn't true in Trump world. and that when covering an environment in which rule following is in short supply, there's no point in following rules. So you're on your own figuring out how much of what he writes is trustworthy. Wolf was able to sell Fire and Fury as an inside account, inside in quotes, that was based upon a few meetings in the Oval Office and a dubious claim about spending time overhearing things from, quote, something like a semi-permanent seat on a couch in the West Wing, unquote, with Trump's non-disapproval. Now, is that true? Did Trump know he was there? Did he have a semi-permanent seat? How was he able to sit there and nobody kick him out?
There were two staffers that worked inside the White House that kept notes and kept glibs and clips of things that were and brought it back and fed it to him for rations and parcels of the book deal. Everybody's on the take in the swing. He brought the swamp. He is the swamp. He's there to drain the swamp, and he brought part of the swamp with him. You have to realize most of those people don't know how to turn on a computer. So the few that did, some of them, even from the damn abomination world, still hung out and hung around in the White House. So they were there, and that's what happened.
And it was part of the book contract that they get paid some of the profits. These people have fed
him. It'll be favors on the other side, because meanwhile, back at the ranch, they're looking for any fodder that takes the president down a notch, brings them up a notch.
See, yeah.
We're not saying that they were on the take for necessarily for the money, but just think that they're going to rally in the whole place, the whole condition, which seems kind of silly, because if you impeach Trump and they put a new president, the new president ain't going to have you sitting in there sweeping up. The new president ain't going to have you. So, you know, if you're looking for job security, you better take care of the devil that you got before you start
right.
getting a new one.
Right.
Just saying.
Okay. So then Tybee says, the book infuriated Trump and many of the people described in its pages, which, of course, ended the magic coach ride. So he doesn't have access anymore. The second book is a compendium.
He fired the staffers that were leaking the information. It was all you heard about. Even Wolf Blitzer was like, from sources close to the White House. And little Don Lemon, he's so sweet, little Don Lemon. He says, well, we've got it straight from the White House that this is what's been going on. It's sweet little Don Lemon. Yes, that's right. From a little white boy's perspective, this is what it was, from a little white boy's perspective. So we just going to know that this is not going to work. This won't last long. This administration is almost
yeah.
done.
So and then, for those who don't know, carry on. And?
No, he is.
You yield?
And for those who don't know.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Don Lemon is a melanated person.
Melanated. Melanation? He's got miscegenation going on? Is that when pitching or catching? We forget. They get him tangled up. But he got him a white boy either way, so it's all right. So,
all right.
Good. He found somebody that loved him. I guess that's good enough. So, but the rest of the story, then, that becomes another rubbing side of this inside line of scoop that it's been identified. And the only thing that makes Trump upset, Trump is truthful. And he's about made everything as transparent. He's already said more than the last 10 presidents could put together.
You had
Lyndon Baines Johnson, what that motherfucker did. You talk about curling some short hairs of the testicles. That curled your milk right there now, big boy. Let me tell you, there was no end to the depravity. Let us write a damn book, Bob. We'll tell them how the milk got in the coconut. You better know that, but
yes. That's
not the point. People do things, okay? People have conjecture. They eat things they're not supposed to eat. They lick things they're not supposed to lick. They taste things they ain't supposed to taste. They see things they ain't supposed to look at. Well, that causes a repose. Every time I get a gallon of corn whiskey, something bad like this happens. Well, they are proponents of these capacities that are outside the human genre. We call it a genre because it goes up and down, back and forth. Here we go, there you go. Most of your past presidents couldn't even pass a drug test. Donald Trump can.
All right, so you're saying that you're describing Trump. He does things, checks things out.
And he does, and he'll say, yeah, I like pussy. I like made CNN say pussy. Well, that's it. He had our vote right there. It's real, Bob. It's real. It's real. It has capacity. It has function. Yes. It's like it applies. Well, that just slaps people in the face. Now, all right, Kitty Carlisle might have been offended, but she liked dick. Okay, so good for her. But maybe it wasn't proper in a socialite's position to bring that up. But Soupy Sales would talk about it. He didn't have no trouble with it, you see.
Yeah.
There's the rub.
So you're saying every other president before Trump was a liar, relatively, compared to Trump?
A dope pumping, pimping, marijuana cigarette smoking philanderer.
Would that apply to Nixon?
Especially to Nixon.
Okay. So that's why he cried at his wife's funeral. A huge guilt, maybe. Or why did he cry? Nixon cry at his wife's funeral.
Because it was a whole thing. He knew she was going to die. He pushed her to the edge with her addictions. Okay.
Yeah.
She had to be a certain way. She didn't want to be a first lady. She didn't want the exposure. She just wanted to have a life and to be happy. Okay. And like in some of the private inside notes, if you think this is a new Nixon, you didn't know the first goddamn Nixon. You didn't know the first, you know, if you think this is a new Nixon, you never knew the real Nixon. You see? So it comes back around with that little smirky little grin, that smirky little, Richie, the little one, the one who mocks people, little Richie, person who mocks people. He mocks people and has that little grin, the little Richie person, little Richie. Yeah, he.
Not Richie Rich, the cartoon character.
No, not that's a cartoon character. No, yeah. You're Rich Little. Rich Little.
Oh, yeah, Rich Little. Yes. The Canadian.
The making up, he made up things. He made up things. Most Canadians do make up things.
You were saying, Pat had some problems.
He fed the addiction because she didn't want to be, she wasn't happy, so the alcohol kept her at bay. Okay, that's fine. Then that went on for so long, and then he encouraged some help. Get her some help. Get her out of the way. She's drunk all the time. So they got her on pills. Well, then she started taking pills, and then that worked good. She got off the liquor and got on the pills. And then, as we all well know, what happens is them pills leave you dragging, they leave you falling, so then you have to add the liquor with the pills.
Mm.
And then that works on, but ooh, the spiral starts, then the Yeti starts jumping up there and that spinning water swirling, you don't know which is it, and you end up at the state dinner with your skirt tail over your head and you don't know what happened, kind of thing. But, you know, it does happen like that. So you get to the point where you can't handle it. And so then the Betty Ford Clinic pops up, and after that, and then you see the whole rub of this whole issue come back and forth. Meanwhile, Gene Dixon is running the damn country at that point.
That's right. So you're saying that he was quite guilty at her funeral for what he'd done to her?
Because he pushed her into a position where there's no place else for her to fit. And then when he tried to get her back, to get her out of it, she couldn't come back.
Right. Okay, so
the abyss was too deep.
Yeah, that's just, Melania doesn't have that problem.
Oh, not at all. No, actually, she's averse on the other side. She won't take an Advil.
Okay. All right, so the second book,
Oh, here's something else that's important that you'll hear about one day. She has a salve that she uses from her country. She says that the only poison in the world today is antibiotics.
Wow.
That's the one true poison. She never had an antibiotic, ever, 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 ever. But she has a black cohosh salve that she uses if she has to have something with inflammation. that you need.
Right, did you say Vase, V-A-S-E, or Stash, S-T-A-S-E?
Salve,
S-A-L-V-E.
S-A-L-V-E.
Right. So she would agree with Carolyn.
She would, and well, she was raised that that was poison, that antibiotics was poison, because it fights the wrong way. It kills everything. If it just killed what it was supposed to kill, it'd be all right, but it doesn't. It kills everything in there.
Right.
The flora and fauna can't take it. So if you start on it, then it takes over, and then it doesn't work, and then you can't get one that will. So now you die because there's no help for you. So she knows this, and rather than deal with that, she just takes the salve. Or maybe if they'd have stopped at penicillin, it might have been okay, but then, see, penicillin doesn't work anymore. So there you go.
Yeah, Carolyn, she looks rather healthy to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, yeah, she is painted up. No, wait now. She will get things nipped and tucked. Don't worry about that. She will do that. She keeps herself perfect.
All right. So the first book ended the magic coach ride. The second book is a compendium of gossip he continued to collect post-exile, presumably from less prestigious coaches. The book is full of stuff that is lurid and sensational, but so dubious in its attributions that even in a review setting, I'm afraid to repeat them, says Matt Tybee. If you really want to know which female politician Trump's claimed to have gotten a blowjob from and which female White House aide Don Jr. apparently wanted to fuck, this book is for you. Wolf did, however, retain one chit from the Fire and Fury experience. He had continued access to Steve Bannon. So this is an interesting part. Let's see what Ian says. The former White House advisor and alt-right pope, Steve Bannon is the first person mentioned in the acknowledgments, where Wolf calls him, quote, the man arguably most responsible for making Trump president. Would you agree with that, Ian?
No, we wouldn't. He was the best supporter of Donald Trump, okay, because what Breitbart, that's what Steve Bannon was Breitbart.
Yes.
We call your Bart Breitbart to this day.
Yeah.
Because he's undercover. Your Breitbart and that Breitbart were both undercover.
Wait a minute. Now,
there.
The Breitbart,
wait a minute
the late
there.
Breitbart.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
I just want to say who he is, but he's no longer here. Was he murdered?
No, Breitbart's on your goober snatcher all the time.
No, that's Bart. I'm talking about Andrew Breitbart, who ran Breitbart magazine or whatever.
Oh, he's
website.
Long killed, but that's
yes.
What Breitbart...
Was he
yeah,
murdered?
Yes, of course he was.
Because he was... People could see that he was helping someone like Trump become president?
Correct. He lined up the stars in the National Enquirer.
Right, so Breitbart is more influential for Trump's presidency than Bannon's, what you're saying.
But he's dead, so
yes.
Bannon became Breitbart.
I see.
Bannon was Breitbart. He is Breitbart.
Yeah, he worked for the magazine, website,
well,
whatever
he got
it, is.
It. He was it then. See, that's what I'm saying. Once he was dead, he was it.
What, was he so, around when Breitbart
yes.
was alive and learning from Breitbart?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, okay.
So we're just waiting for opportunity.
Like every other thing, yeah, he's just doing capitalization. Capitalization.
All right.
Good.
So Matt Tybee says that Michael Wolff praises Bannon for being one of the few people in Trump land not to have accused him of making up quotes, adding, quote, Wolff says, it is a measure of Bannon's character that he stood by his remarks in my first book, Fire and Fury, without complaint, quibbles, or hurt feelings. That's true, I guess, right? There's no. Is there
okay.
a reason why Bannon did that? Didn't alienate
no.
Michael Wolff?
Well, he was afraid.
All right.
They all
afraid
got.
Of...
Wait. Now stop. Think about what you're saying. They're all ass deep in the same whorehouse, Bob. They're not going to
yeah.
undo one to get to another to get to another one. This is the good old boys club. It says, okay, you don't say nothing this week, and I got it next week, and you don't do this for that, and that, and that's how you go. You know this already.
Right. So you're saying that Michael Wolff and Bannon are part of the old boys network. They're friends.
Yes.
And they scratch each other's back. Okay. Then Matt Taibbi says, of course, if you've read the first book, Fire and Fury, it's hard to imagine what quibbles Bannon might have had with the book. Wolf, in that book, the first book, made Bannon out to be a cross between Thomas Jefferson and Optimus Prime. He lures it on even thicker in this book, the second book.
Maybe. Yeah, the Optimus Prime is the all-knowing knower that knows the knower knows.
And so, I don't know what that
he
is.
He was the Optimus Prime in the movie, the Transformers.
Oh, I didn't see that. No, okay.
You'll have
all
to
right.
watch it. It's good fight. Cars, which you don't know what are either, turn into machines, which you don't know what are either, turn into people, turn into a thing that comes from another planet that is the tech body to save the world, so the tech body has a place to hide for the next million years until the next space war takes on and they can take over. You should watch it. It's pretty cool.
That's a preposterous plot. People sold that? Wow, that's amazing.
Oh, my God, you can't believe they made a million, Bob. They made a million.
I actually did see a Transformers in December 2007. I visited Andrew Crystal in New Zealand. And I guess he was a fan of the series, so the new thing came out, so he made me sit down with him one evening to look at it. I'd never seen one. 10 minutes into it, he jumps up and stops the recording and says, "You fucking wrote this, didn't you?" I said, "Well, what? Why are you saying that?" He says, "Yeah, look, they got your stuff in here. They had 22 people, 22 this," and he was really frightened. He suddenly said, "Who are you? Like, how could I be involved in his favorite childhood fantasy movies that he had followed?" And so I said, he says, "Tell me how you do this." And I just said three words, Joe Dud Slode, who he didn't know.
He should have said Ralph Doobie.
That's equal. But see, anyways, Joe Dunn Sloan. So he immediately starts Googling it, and he can't find anything on him. Who is it? So that proved that I was the real guy, because he wasn't on the Googler Burger Snatcher.
Right.
I can't remember, so I just kept going with that, and I don't think he ever figured it out. If he did years later, then I don't know what he thinks. But that was pretty funny that I named the Illuminati guy, and he's an actual man who's in the slums of Huntington Park, it was called, in deep L.A., where Mexican neighbors would frequently beat him up as he made the D-cell. So that was my little joke. But anyways, the Transformers, I knew nothing about it, was about me, too. Another case of Xenocrity.
Yeah. It was. It is.
Yeah.
It do.
Okay. So he's making Bannon out to be quite amazing, and he enlarges on even thicker here. You're saying that's Wolf has to do that so he can get material from Bannon to write. He has to get fiction from Bannon.
In essence, that's exactly right.
All right. So it says the book's second chapter, called The Do-Over, is an unabashed, slurpy, slobbery portrait of Bannon, described as a, quote, fixer, power broker, and kingmaker without portfolio. Then he puts, Taibbi puts in the brackets, read, a job? So, question mark. So he didn't even have a job, maybe. A scene describing a Bannon encounter with fellow guest bag ex-Svengali Larry Summers is a depressing enough metaphor.
Svengali.
Yes, Svengali. A scene describing a Bannon encounter with fellow gas bag ex-Svengali Larry Summers, he was president of Harvard at one point, is a depressing enough metaphor about America's two reigning political ideologies that you'll feel like eating a grenade after watching these two hardened gas bags debate. In Fire and Fury, the first book, Bannon sneered at the collusion probe but cackled with schadenfreude at the coming legal maelstrom. Now, here's where we get into the good stuff. When Bannon heard Mueller hired prosecutor Andrew Weissman, the, quote, LeBron James of money laundering investigations, unquote, Bannon told Wolf he was convinced the Trump family would ultimately be swept away by financial prosecutions. Bannon said, quote, they're on a beach trying to stop a Category 5, he said. Now, we know the Southern District of New York law office is trying to bring down Trump. What do you say about that, these accusations, Trump family, very corrupt criminal enterprise? And,
It's ridiculous.
Okay, so why would Bannon say that? Is he just pissed off
because
and get fired?
He probably
didn't say it. Where is he now? Where is he now?
He's in Eastern Europe stirring up Nazi causes. Retrieving the Nazis is what he's pursuing. He's going around the world lecturing and stirring up the far right.
Okay, good. Perfect. See, if it was all that, he would still be hanging a boot. But
yeah.
If he's not hanging a boot, he's gone. And the goneness tells you what happened. There was a crossfire. We don't see eye to eye. I like you pretty good. Let's move on to bigger and better things. And to having those kind of positions, you may feel that way. People say that about you. They say crazy things about you too, Bob. But it's
yeah.
not personal. And you go, yes, I resemble that remark. Well, it's no different than this conversation, you see.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yes, but it doesn't have any relevance whatsoever, ever at all, ever, with the reality. So the position of the maelstrom of the conundrum is that knowing what he knows about how Trump does the deals and business and what he thinks about pussy would, of course, affect everything. So he would never have any length of stay having these avant-garde positions that he's actually happy to say, yes, I have it on good authority. I am fond of female companionship. Yes, yes, I am. Yes. Yes.
Do you mean you're talking about Trump?
Yes.
Yeah. And Bannon witnessed that. So what's your point?
So Bannon was saying they're going to go to jail because of the way they feel and handle due with money.
Now, so Trump fired, does Trump fire people for good reasons?
Define good reasons.
Well, something that Trump, you could say Trump had integrity, he required loyalty. He was worth being loyal to, and if you started screwing up, you were out because he was on a serious agenda to clean up the swamp.
No. He'll keep you. He'll keep you. If you're a fuck-up, he'll keep you. You become the bad guy. He'll keep you. He could have fired Mueller. He kept Mueller. Mueller.
Right.
He kept Mueller. He kept him because they was his jackass. He was his mule.
Right. So, well, then Bannon was not a mule. That's why he got rid of him.
No. That's right. That's right. Good. Good. That's exactly.
But are you saying that Bannon knew too much?
Well, no, not too much. He knew a lot, and it was happily. He knew it happily. So it's not like this was a big secret. That's the thing they can't stand about Trump is he doesn't have secrets. He'll
yeah.
say, "Yeah, we did. We made a good deal. We made a bad deal. I'm gonna make a deal. I'm going to run this right up your asshole. Do you see this in my hand? I'm fishing to put it up your asshole. You think I'm joking? You think I'm joking?" Tweet. Then he gets on the tweeter. I did tell him that I was going to shove this right up his asshole, and yes, and it was going to be very therapeutic. And you think I'm kidding? Try me. Say something. That's what, say something. Wish you would. You think I won't put tariffs on Mexicans? Them damn wetbacks, you think I won't do that? And yes, I know about all the Americans that's moved all the business down there because they can do it, because they can take advantage of all the unfair, disadvantaged, disheveled labor, and then trucks that come back and forth to load across there with all the damn dope in it. We know exactly what's going on, for Pete's sake, that these tariffs are going to hurt U.S. businesses. No, they're not going to hurt nothing. They're going to start policing themselves instead of helping them people across their country. It's trying to come in here and take over like they tried to do in Angela Merkel's world, which failed, by the way. So we're not having it. Yeah, we're going to do it. Yeah. Yeah, I said it. Yeah, we're going to do it. Yeah. You don't like it? Right. So call your senator. That's what you need to do. Call Nancy Pelosi. She'll help you out of this. I bet you call Sheila Jackson Lee, bless God, down in Houston, Texas. Ooh, yeah, she'll tell you all about what you need to know about Donald J. Trump. Yeah, you need to do that.
You mentioned, did you say Merkel fell?
Yeah,
Merkel fell.
She did.
Yeah. Okay, so so he's saying shit after and appealing to Wolf, saying that the Trumps would be arrested. Okay, so... Bannon
Wait,
says they're
door.
On a beast.
Get the door. Thank you.
Yeah, that might be Jimmy.
Uh-huh. Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's Jimmy. Okay. Hey, he's always bringing me stuff.
We let him.
Okay.
Wash your hands or wash. It's
yeah.
dirty.
Well, Carol's getting it for me. I don't have to wash my hands.
Oh, yeah, I know, but you got to wash whatever it is. It's filthy.
Hey, Carol, did you just tell Jimmy that Ion said hi?
Yeah.
How did you describe Ion? Okay.
When I said, oh, Jimmy, Ion says hi, Jimmy looked back and said, huh? I said, we're always on the phone with a friend of ours when you come, so he said hi. Oh.
But his non-physical looked puzzled. He goes, what? What's that word, Ion? But Carol smoothed it over.
Jimmy's been ionized.
Yay, we love him. We love him.
Right.
He's still nasty, though. We got to give him a bath. I'm going to watch him.
Okay, so Ben is just making up shit to appeal to Michael. I mean, the book makes him seem to be a Thomas Jefferson, so not a bad deal for a loser like Bannon right now. Okay, so
and he's gonna hold himself, and nobody cares because all this puffery that's being written, everybody's kind of laughing. They're laughing, but they're all getting money. See, because after a little while, even it's when you hate. Do you remember Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil? You had this little gigolo who was fucking everybody, Jim Williams and the women and the this. Well, they killed the gigolo, or Jim did. He killed him.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they made a big deal. Well, it made everybody mad because other people were fucking that same gigolo.
Right.
You see? Other people. So he messed up a lot of people's gig over some marijuana cigarettes, you see. It wasn't just this. It wasn't just the pompous, it was the others used it too, so now it wasn't a problem until they tore up everybody's playhouse. And that's what Trump's in the process of doing, is turning
right,
out.
Right, so he got rid of Bannon, which had fed a lot of different arms, networks.
Correct, represented a lot of arms that had been waived.
All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so
this is fun,
this
Bob. Did you pick this? This is pretty good.
Yeah, I picked this topic. In the second book called Siege, Bannon continues this theme, laughing at the categorization of the Trump family as a, quote, semi-criminal enterprise, but he says, I think we can drop the semi part. So he's saying the Trump family is a criminal enterprise. Bannon goes on to say, quote, this is where...
We already answered that.
Yeah. He goes on to say, quote, this is where it isn't a witch hunt, as Trump's always claiming, adding that Trump's real crime is being, quote, just a crooked business guy, one worth $50 million instead of $10 billion, just another scumbag. So he's really laying on about Trump as a jerk. I guess he said $50 million that Trump isn't a billionaire he's trying to claim, right? He's only got $50
million. That's right.
So you say that's not even worth commenting on.
He rents. Oh, yes, it is. It's ridiculous. Hold on just a second. He rents the Washington Post Office, which he spent more money than that on that one building. And that one building has a value and a worth that he owns personally. Okay?
Right.
That's what he's talking about from the porch, the Speaker of the House's porch, looking. He says, oh, look, there's my tower, Trump Tower in Washington.
Right.
You can see it. Because it's almost taller than the Capitol, which nothing is supposed to be, of course. But, yeah. No, so that can't be true. That can't be true. If that one building that he rents from the United States government is worth more than that. You see what
right.
I'm saying? It can't work. It can't
okay.
work.
So it's so Wolf is being a sloppy journalist, letting Bannon say
Sure. Well, who said Bannon said that? Bannon might have said he's a really good businessman and he's made $50 million a day. And they turned around and said he only has $50 billion. That's how he got $10 billion is by making $50 million a day. See?
Right, so you're saying that like we're putting down Bannon, but Wolf is a liar in a lot of what he presents.
As he presented himself.
Right.
That's what he said. Don't believe me. No, really, don't believe me. Really, don't believe me.
So this book, Siege, could have been an epic black comedy and Wolf even seems to know it. In trying to assess where, quote, Donald Trump falls on a vertiginous sliding scale of human behavior, unquote, he describes, this is Michael Wolf, describes a figure almost limitlessly guilty of every kind of corruption, personal and professional.
Pick one. Pick one. Pick. That's the point. Just you. Now here. Okay. Here's the punishment. Now you go find the crime. Here's the punishment. You go find the crime. Now that's not my job. I'm not supposed to. I got the punishment. I'm on the punishment committee. I'm impeach 45. Impeach 45. Impeach 45. Impeach. 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 Impeach 45. Y'all go find the trouble. I ain't worried about that. We're just going to impeach 45. I ain't worried about what happened. Y'all go find that. Make it up. Go make something. Okay.
Okay.
Nancy Pelosi, she don't want him. She don't want him impeached. She wants him in jail.
and she says, and we'll get put him in jail when we win the election. She knows she's not going to win the election, right? She knows that.
She does. She knows.
Yeah. But she went up them all. You guys want to impeach him? No, I want to execute him.
That's right. I've already sharpened him. I'm sharpening the machete. We're going to lop his damn head off with. Yeah, we got it in for me. Don't be surprised, Bob.
Americans out there.
You're in a funny land now, Bob. It's a funny land now.
I was just going to bring it up.
Everything.
Americans are looking, the average, whatever they are, the billions of Americans are watching this, and they're going to make sure that no Democrat becomes president for another 30 years. Correct?
Yeah, at least 30 years. At least 30 years. It's so much so that Rush Limbaugh is starting to take vacation days. Now there's when you know you get a bad soup when Rush starts taking time off. There's nothing to talk about. It's not good.
It's game over. Rush won.
Game over. Yeah, when Rush starts having a lot of filling guests with crazy factors, the Van Helsing factors, and all the different ones that come to play, it's pretty interesting.
Okay. I think maybe Wolf says this in his book, or Matt Taibbi is making the pattern. Upon becoming president, however, okay, so he did all these crimes all through his life. Then, on becoming president, however, he is placed under a massive, unrelenting investigation by the same law enforcement bodies that allowed him for decades to get away with anything and everything. In a great cosmic joke, when justice finally springs to action, its agents go looking for the one crime in the legal code Trump apparently didn't commit.
That's the single crime,
So, Michael Wolf, for all his journalistic peccadilloes or journalistic sins, bad writing or lying writing, is one of the few writers to tackle Trump who possesses both the sources and the sense of absurdity to tell this story. So he's saying Wolf has a good sense of the absurdity of all this, and I guess that pattern I just laid out, that they're going after Trump for the one crime he didn't do. So Wolf comes close to grasping the irony of the Trump corrupticon, that's capitalized, corrupt icon or corrupticon. Wolf comes close to grasping the irony of the Trump corrupticon not only becoming president, that's very ironic, but escaping a full-blown federal investigation aimed right at him when he writes about Trump's staff marveling at their boss's survival. Okay, so is that true? Is there the staff, the ones who are still there, marveling at Trump surviving?
For Pete's sake, no. Yeah, we're gonna murder the president. He lives one more day. Yay! Let's have a party. We'll have a party. Yay! Get poison today. Yay! Drink the poison. We'll try it tomorrow, but today he didn't. So let's have a party. Yeah, let's have a kegger. We'll have a kegger. Bob, it's ridiculous.
Okay, but this is fun. Wolf describes Trump's team as being completely indifferent to his fate. Quote. They wouldn't grieve if he went down. So he's saying the staff are just crummy people.
Trump wouldn't Hold on. Trump wouldn't grieve if he went down.
No, no. These people wouldn't. His supporter, his staff wouldn't grieve if he went down.
Correct. But I'm saying, and Trump also, if Trump went down, Trump would. He's filed bankruptcy more times than Carolyn sold bottles of magnesium.
Yes.
He'll file bankruptcy and he'll say, well, we win some, we lose some. He single-handedly destroyed Atlantic City and said, well, that was a pretty bad day. Anyway. And
okay,
then
well,
he's down there at the auction buying his damn stuff out of the hotel because he said, I paid $100 for these lamps. I'm buying them for $12 a piece. Come on, let's buy some. I can loan somebody money. We'll do a sub split, and I can do a co-op, and we'll put them in a building over here in Staten Island. It'll be great. We'll love it. It'll be great. We'll make a fortune. I bought these for $100. Now the bankruptcy court's auctioning them for $12. Let's get a bunch of them. This is a great deal.
Right now,
he would say that too.
Yes, and that's what Michael Wolff says. He agrees with you because the next sentence is, Wolff describes Trump's team as being completely indifferent to his fate. Now, they wouldn't grieve if Trump went down. But Wolff adds, they accepted the likelihood that the president would be taken down by the forces pursuing him, but also marveled at the remarkable fact that he had not yet been taken down, which led, however, inexplicably to the astounding possibility that he might never be taken down.
Now.
That's what they're thinking about.
Now. Yeah.
Beg your pardon?
Now, that's the case. That wasn't.
That's the case now.
They're very concerned now because now it's troublesome.
Right.
It's going to be a good gig, and they figured it wouldn't last, and we'll see how it goes. Well, it's hung out pretty well. He's doing okay.
So you're saying the staff is wondering about their own identity in relation to this eternal dynasty?
Yes, because some of them are too far down the rabbit hole, and they said bad things, and Trump knows it, and he don't say a word. He's good. Yeah, things happen. I'm going to use that. I might use that later. I might need you for something else. I'd rather have you knowing where I know. I know that you know you fucked up. I like that. You sit right on the front row.
The anti-Trump faction likes to latch on to the fact that the most evil man in America, Roy Cohn, that's C-O-H-N, he was the aide to Senator McCarthy in the horrible McCarthy period. He also let mafia guys meet in his office. As a lawyer, they had client privilege. So they say Trump's mentor was Roy Cohn. And Trump said he learned from Cohn, you know, how to be tough. Or he said Cohn was the toughest guy he ever saw. What would you say Trump got out of Cohen or learned?
The tenacity that can sell you an insurance policy on your building, collect the premium for the insurance policy, cancel the insurance policy, and then go burn down your goddamn building. Then call you on the phone and says, you have a problem, sir. Your policy is no longer in effect. Yes, but I'm going to get you for arson for burning down my building. Well, sorry, but the policy that you don't have doesn't cover arson.
So he learned that business savvy from Cohen?
Xenocracy, yeah.
Xenocracy. So Trump was fully aware of the bad reputation of Cohen, but he said this guy might know something because everybody hates him.
Everybody else in that world, the most hated people in, well, Bob, you did City Island. The most hated people in New York City are the crookedest ones. But they're the ones,
are
the
what,
ones that
ones?
Keep reelecting. The crookedest ones are the worst ones.
Yes,
they're the ones
yes.
that keep getting, they're the ones that make the Politburo. They're the ones that make the parish speakers. They're the ones that become the ombudsman. They're the ones that become the different borough representatives, they're the ones
yeah.
with the councils, and the worst ones, the Chris Christies, are the ones that keep putting back in office.
Hey, Carolyn, are you on mute?
No.
You should get on. It's getting an echo.
Speaker, so
don't do that. No, get off speaker. It's causing a little distortion.
I know. Bye!
Okay. Yeah. So I got your point there. So Trump was smart to learn from the real New Yorker, Roy Cohen.
if you can stomach it. See,
yeah.
we can't stomach it because it's ridiculous. But if you can stomach it, it's great. You know what you're working with. You know what you're dealing with. It's a mess. It's stupid. It's not good. Not a problem.
So Trump had an ability to hang out with the despicable and take it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a sign of intelligence or greed or what? What do you call that, Trump's ability to take it?
Chutzpah. Called chutzpah.
Okay. Yeah, because people who went into Cohen's home, he had a nice home in 65th Street or something, it said it smelled. Smelled like the devil's chamber or something. So mm-hmm. Trump studied that. Okay, did Trump have a mentor that we don't know about on another level, another
yes.
scale?
Yes, yes.
All right. Okay, so then Matt Taibbi writes, the book describes with varying degrees of believability the Trump family's fear about being felled by shady real estate deals, crooked loan applications, bank fraud, and other legal problems. Do the Trump family have fear of all that stuff?
No.
All
they
right.
eat them. They're the author of them. You can't have it both ways. You can't be public enemy number one and then be afraid you're going to get taken over by public enemy number one. He's the most outrageous, scandalous person that's ever walked on the face of the earth, and they're worried about who's going to get him. Well, he says, I'm the smartest person that's ever been. I'm the biggest person that's ever been. I'm bigger than Jesus Christ. Christ, I don't know what y'all see in him. He's never owned any real estate. He's never done any deals. I make good deals. Jesus fucked up. He didn't make good deals. What did Jesus do for you? I'm here. I'm right here in New York taking care of you. I build things. There's the New York skyline has been changed. Upper East Side is never going to be the same again because of me, not because of your damn Jesus. I don't know what y'all got going on. Yeah, he built it himself.
I can see where you say he's Bob in the White House. He sounds like me.
Sure.
I just don't concentrate on New York and the East Side. I got a bigger canvas.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, there's not much left. It's going to be, he'll short it all before it goes under. He knows it's going underwater, too, by the way.
Really?
He knows this.
Did he listen to us, or he has other sources?
Well, yeah, we didn't say, Bob, you can't tell everything. You know,
he knows what's going to happen.
You'll be like Breitbart.
Okay.
You'll be like Breitbart now. You start getting caught telling tales.
Yeah. Okay. So Matt Taibbi sort of goes along with this theme of Michael Wolff and says it may yet play out that way, with investigations fobbed off on the Southern District of New York and other venues, resulting in non-Russia-related probes that could decimate the Trump family fortune, ostensibly through seizure of ill-gotten gains. Wolff even puts the president's favorite architectural manhood prosthesis in the crosshairs. Wolff says, one potential casualty of a successful forfeiture action was the president's signature piece of real estate. The government could seize Trump Tower. Now, you're saying that Trump is ready for that, and he's going to short it before they do it. Did you say
that's right. He will want them to. He will hope they will.
And
then when they seize it, then it'll be gone, and he won't have to worry about it anymore. And
because he knows the flood's coming.
Because you understand what's wrong with Trump Tower? He made an easement. He got an easement to build Trump Tower. That the ground floor is public property. It's public property. You don't even own the building. He had to get an easement. There was no ground for Trump Tower that it's sitting on. That's a public thoroughfare. If they wanted to come open and make a whorehouse in the bottom of Trump Tower, he couldn't say a thing.
So what's the advantage or what is that a problem for Trump?
No, it's a great thing because he didn't have to pay for that property. So now there's no taxes on that whole process. There's no taxes I don't have to pay taxes on a park that everybody uses, do I?
Okay, well, that's pretty good. You got another break early in his life.
And that's that's the essence of the forfeiture action is what they're talking about.
Right, right.
He doesn't care. Take it away. You know what? I'm loaned up to the hilt on this particular building. Then you turn right around and you go, stop. Google, what is the value of Trump Tower? The value, the dollar value of Trump Tower.
You go hit your ear and go blip, blip, and you go blip. And you say, hey, bitch, what's the value of Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue in New York City? What's the value? And it'll give you the value. And it's probably several dollars. It's that particular. If a two-bedroom, $200 a month rent-controlled apartment sells for $11 million in a bad Soho kind of a neighborhood,
try that on
in Trump Tower and see what you get. That alone messes up their value of his valuation of what he's worth. You see what I'm saying? They're talking out of both sides of their mouth, Bob, and that's the rub. Is they're trying to say, see, we told you he robbed it, everybody got all the money. No, you didn't. You just said he ain't got any money. And how did he rob everybody and get the money, and now he doesn't have any money? Okay, so the money he didn't rob is the money he doesn't got that makes him worth $10 billion. Right? No, wait. Okay, so he's not honest. And he made it all up. He didn't steal anything. Oh, no, wait. No, he did. He's a crook. We proved it. He's a crook. Okay. So the money he stole. Wait, no, wait. Yeah. Okay, the money he stole that didn't raise his value, which was more than $50 million a bunch of times, is not the same money that he used to make him be worth that much money now. Or he gave it to somebody else, or. You see the rub here? After a little while, the arguments become such a complaint position that, you know, I paid that bill with this money right here in my hand, kind of a thing.
Okay. All right, thank you for that. The other big news break, as Wolf's publisher calls it, so they blurb the book as having this big news break in the book, is the news break is that Robert Mueller's Office of Special Counsel readied a draft of an indictment of President Trump for obstruction of justice by the spring of 2018. Did Mueller do that?
He didn't do that. He said there was no obstruction.
That's a year later.
But there wasn't the draft was for nothing. That's the same way when Comey got up there and says, bad things have happened here. And nothing happened there, but bad things didn't happen. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so there wasn't even a draft readied?
No.
Could have been written by an underling? Wishful grimoire?
Hold on. No more than they have the articles of impeachment already drafted. Do they have those drafted? Are they stuck in a drawer somewhere? Maybe, but it doesn't mean anything.
All right, okay. So Matt Taibbi shows how Wolf wrote about this. According to this draft of impeachment, Donald Trump's scheme to obstruct justice began on the seventh day of his administration. And then they say this draft is a three-count indictment. Ostensibly, it would have charged him with attempting to protect General Michael Flynn from prosecution, with covering up his son's meeting with Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya, and with retaliation against Deputy FBI Director Andrew McCabe, among other things. That's all fiction?
Every bit of it.
Okay. So Wolf is counting on an anti-Trump crowd out there to let him be so lazy in his journalism.
They're not reading it. Nobody's buying the book. What happens is it just becomes something they can use for fodder on CNN to say, once again, if you hate Trump, this is the way to go. But now nobody's watching CNN anymore, so I don't know what they're going to do. It's not good. No bueno.
Right, so at
Bob,
best,
no
they'll do what I'm doing, read a review like this to get the highlights. That's all they'll do.
At best. Yeah, at best, because it's a stretch for you, because after about the third paragraph, you're like, this is ridiculous. And we could be watching porn or be at the beach be more interesting than this.
Yes. Okay, but this is archetypal, this review, and the controversy.
It is.
It's a good summary.
For your good work, no contest, but if you didn't have a job to do like you, then of course you would never subject yourself to such frivolity.
Right. And you're actually enjoying this. You're getting to say a lot of good things.
Oh yeah. We appreciate it very much, because what it does for us is it lets you shine, and we like it when you shine, Bob.
Yes,
it's good. Feathers with the stars in your crown, so is Ion flourished.
So was Ion flushed?
Yes, flushed, as in made better, flushed.
Oh, okay,
flushed.
Right.
Matching.
Metabe continues, but Mueller, in Wolf's telling, chooses not to press forward over the objections of some of his team. He is weighed down by what Wolf unironically describes as his nagging belief, that's in quotes, nagging belief, that he had no such authority to be the corrective to the louche and corrupt president. Now, I've heard that before. Is that true, that Mueller knew he didn't really have the authority to do what people wanted him to do?
It wasn't the authority. It was ridiculous. You could also arrest the president for murder today. He didn't have to murder anybody, and he won't stay in jail very long, but you can drag him out and say you're a murderer.
Mueller could have done the draft indictment and announced it. He could have done that.
But
he would have been embarrassed.
Correct. And that's why Trump's let everybody do anything they wanted to do. He accused me of something, go after me. You know what? It's right. I'm a scoundrel. I've been a bad boy. Yeah, hurt me. Yeah, come on, hurt me. Is that all you got? I like this. Come on, do a little bit more. Got some more? I like it more. Give me this. And now everybody who's ready, here's what your book ought to end with. Say what you will, do what you want to, but everybody so far, without fail or exception, that have raised their hand against the last trump of God, they shall fall.
Right. That should be the last word, yes, in the book. So that's ridiculous about Mueller, and that his nagging belief saved Mueller, because if he actually had done that, he'd be in big, big trouble today. Made it.
True.
Draft indictment and release it.
Well, but
so
what
then
happened, the work that they've done so far has actually made Trump. Trump's tickled to death. He's thrilled beyond words. All this ridiculous stuff that they're doing to him and for him, against him, and on to it's tickling him to death. He's like, see. He said, there's an emergency on the more southern border. There is no emergency. He's making this up. There's no difference. There's not. Next thing you know, then these caravans start. Thousands of people. Now the Democrats are saying, there's an emergency at the wall. I even did an executive order. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. Here, look at the executive order. Here it is. Right here. See it right here. And I'm going to take the money because it's an emergency. And I'm going to take the money from things that y'all fiddly around and not going to be seats I've not filled. I'm going to take the money out of piles of money stacked up that hadn't been used. To use this thing to fix money. No, you're not. Yes, I am. And now the law is passed, and he can use that money. So now he's got the wall and the money, and he's building the wall, and they've not one of them going to get a nickel's worth of credit for the wall that he's building. But they all were against it, remember? That's the problem with being against it. Are you for it or against it? Well, if you got to decide and you're for it, and if it goes again, now you're in trouble. Or if you go again and it's a fur, then you're in trouble. So either way, you're sideways. He says choose. He says, just like Jesus said to Judas, do what you're going to do and do it quickly. Well, let the rest of it work out. If I'm half as bad as y'all say I am, they'll have me killed before lunch tomorrow. So why get excited about it? They'll have me drug out here and I'll be drawn and quartered. Yeah, the horses will be running in every direction. Sangle trees on both sides ripping me apart. My guts be strode up and down Pennsylvania Avenue. The hay hire will have them lined up. They'll be buying extra tickets to watch my innards be swept out of the washed out of the east side of Pennsylvania Avenue. If I was half as bad as y'all say I am. And he just kind of laughed it off because he's like, yeah, let's go.
Now, okay. When they're alone together, does Melania and Trump laugh about this situation the way you're making me laugh?
They do. Because they see it. It's no different. When you're always the one that's under the gun, when you're always the one they're shooting at, when you're always the one that's, then you turn around and laugh because you know better. It's like, okay. And I have a penis. Did I mean, I have a penis. And you laugh, it's like, why does he keep talking about penises? You made fun of me about the size of my penis. I'll show it to you. You want to see it? I'll show it to you. Don't bother me. I have a penis. I do.
I'll show it to you. If you need to see it, if it'll make you feel better, I'll let you see it. And then, now they sing Trump's penis on the TV, and he says, yes, you want to see it. I want to show it to you. That's what you have to do. And that sounds the most ridiculous aspect that you could ever come up with, but it's no different than what they're doing. Look at what they're doing.
Right.
And then every time they think they've got it, we got him. He says, yep, you got me. Yeah, let's see that. How does that go again? There is no trouble in Chernobyl, especially in Russia. Right? Yeah, Russia, Chernobyl. Yeah, Russia. No, wait, no. Here it, no, damn. Oh, yeah, no. Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, never mind. And that's how this thing has been going. And it's a little over the top. It's almost avant-garde at this point because now it's no fun anymore because they see him coming. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, everybody's putting the money in their pocketbook. They're running around with suitcases full.
His enemies are.
Absolutely. All those cats. Who ever heard of Peter Strick stroke before this happened? Whoever even heard of the motherfucker? Never even knew he was. He's a nothing. A non sequitur, we say.
So now he'll write a book or something.
But see, they're getting all this press on the press or the pull. The press or pull. Yeah, press. No pull. No, it's pull. No press. It's one of those.
Okay, so it's the majority of the country against California and New York?
Because half of the people live in California and New York.
Right, and the other half lives in the middle. So Trump's
everywhere
got the middle
else. Except for those few people with Crazy Maisie, Aurora.
In Hawaii.
Aurora. Yeah. Aurora.
Okay, so check your mic. I don't know if it's blurry for everybody, but you're a little blurry.
Is that better or worse?
That's better. Okay.
Oh,
so Matt Tarbay says...
And maybe that sloppy... Hey, guess what? That sloppy tech buddy, he'll try to slip it in on you now. You got to watch that. From your physical, non-physical... The tech body will lure you in there. It'll get you slid in there if you're not careful. Is that better or worse?
And make lousy recording? Is that what you're saying?
Correct. To make you listen better. Lousy recording make you listen. Make you pay attention. Perfect diction makes you sloppy.
Very good. Okay, so then Matt Tarbay says, I'm the last person who should ever complain about thesaurus murdering prose. So Matt says he uses the thesaurus a lot, like Wolf does. But Wolf, who also wrote about Trump's louche behavior in Fire and Fury, the first book, takes it to a new level. The Wolfian translation of deep state, for instance, is, quote, intelligence community myrmidons. I got to look up myrmidons. Do you know what myrmidons is?
It would basically be the created pawns that haven't been created yet. Pawns in a chess set that haven't been made yet.
Okay, well, intelligence community myrmidons or myrmidons is...
Pawns that haven't been created yet.
What are pawns?
Pawns. P-A-W-N.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's the meaning.
A
follower or subordinate of a powerful person, typically one who is unscrupulous and carries out orders unquestioningly. One of Hitler's myrmidons, and it comes from Greek mythology. So he's saying here,
you like that?
We
just put that in there. We just put that in there for you, Bob, so it would made us look good, didn't it?
Okay, on the Wikipedia. Okay. So deep state, according to Michael Wolff, is intelligence community pawns, myrmidons. Wolff makes George Will sound like Tony Danza, who was some American actor. For no other reason.
He was on Cheers. Don't you remember Tony Danza?
Oh, yeah. I never saw that, but you're right. He was on Cheers, yeah. For no other reason than that, his books are at least entertaining. All right, then.
Well.
Like bruises on a corpse, so... his first book's a corpse, and now his second book is Bruises on the Corpse.
His second book should be Engaging Necrophilia.
Yeah.
That's
okay,
Necrophilia like, rising. That's what it should be.
Yeah, yeah. There it is. That's Kenneth Anger's. What was his? Yeah. Scorpio rising, or was it?
Yeah.
The devil rising. Babylon.
Yeah.
Like bruises
Babylon.
On a. Yes. Like bruises on a corpse, Wolf's pages are also covered all over with extravagant literary allusions. That means references. Mueller in Siege becomes a Hamlet figure. The description of the special counsel as an overgrown pearl clutcher who can't make up his mind about anything seems to have come at least in part from Bannon, who's an admirer of Lenin, whose humorous take on Mueller's investigation is that it was insufficiently arbitrary and authoritarian. Insufficiently arbitrary and authoritarian. Then Bannon says about Mueller, never send a Marine to do a hitman's job. Now, what's that? What's that mean? Marines are ineffective?
Benghazi.
Oh, yeah. Right, Benghazi. Okay, so...
They don't really like to talk about that, Bob.
No, they don't. Okay, so the... Mueller put LaRouche in jail, and LaRouche people say Mueller's always been an incompetent person. So they didn't mind Mueller going after Trump because they thought Trump was not guilty, and therefore Mueller was incompetent. Would you say that Mueller is an incompetent wimp?
Not incompetent. He may be a wimp, but he's not incompetent. And we say that because he's being used for a functioning purpose.
Well, does he know he's being used? Did he know?
No, he doesn't now, but he did.
No, yes.
He does now,
he knows now, but he didn't know he was being used.
Correct.
So... it's not that he's trying to help Trump. That wasn't his goal. He wasn't a secret person on behalf of Trump. He generally thought, oh, okay, this needs to be investigated because he got fooled by the tech body. And he went in, and then he realized he got set up.
He didn't get set up. He knew the FISA warrants were fictitious. When they went and had the meeting, let's go tell the president. Now, listen now how stupid this is. Let's go tell the president that there is an op-ed out there that says that he paid Russian hookers to piss on a bed that the Obama Nation and the nigger Michelle slept in, that pissed in that bed, like that was going to prove something. I don't know what a golden shower helps the conversation or not. So we're going to go tell the president that this happened. And when we tell the president this happened, it becomes national security. So now it becomes something in the record. So now it becomes something that he's been informed on. So now it's a classified matter. So now that's what he uses, that information, to then take and get up to the FISA warrant and say this is the terrible thing that took place. The president knows about it. And that's why it's national security. See? And then he gets out of the meeting and says, I don't trust this. I don't think it's going to work out real good. The wire didn't work. I had a wire on, but it didn't come through.
Who's saying that? Mueller saying that?
No. You're Comey.
Okay, yeah, it didn't work.
Then he turned, it didn't work. So then he goes and leaks a letter to the New York Slime. Leaks it to the New York Slime, which then turns it into the Washington Compost. And they turn right around and they say, uh-oh. And then it leaks out somehow. It just leaks out. It's out there. And now it's all the rage. Now everybody's talking about it. And then everybody, Ma and Paul Kittle, decide that he's a bad dude. He's a bad dude. We got to get rid of the bad dude. And so then all of a sudden it goes on a little bit, and all of a sudden he didn't do all that. And then you know what? You know what Lenin said? Oh, wait, no, this isn't Greg we're talking to. He said Stalin.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah.
It wasn't the Stalin's version. It was that Brezhnev. No, it wasn't Brezhnev. It was that Google that's up there now. No, it wasn't Nikita Khrushchev. It wasn't Khrushchev. Putin. It might have been Putin. He might have had some sweet potatoes, be a poot root. He might have had some Putin. So Putin gets up and says, well, if President Trump did get Russian hookers to piss on the bed, Russia has the best hookers and the best bladders to piss than anywhere else in the world. Our hookers are top rate, top rate. Everybody's laughing their damn ass off because it is the funniest, stupidest thing ever, ever, ever. Because it's a matter of point of who cares? You can get the hookers to piss on you. They pay to do all that. Okay, come piss on me. I get off on it. It's good. Knock yourself out. What difference does it make for Jiminy Crickpete's sake? Except it becomes documentable to prove or to lie to. Easy. Now, you talk about them pals that you so fond of. You get Sidney Powell on this show and let's talk about it. She'll tell you right quick how the milk got in the coconut, because what you done is treasonous. It ain't against the law. You get hung. You get your ass hung over this shit in about 1 second. In about 1 second. And guess what, Bob? It's a coming. Don't you think it ain't coming. He's not going to let it go. He's not.
Trump's not going to let it go.
We wouldn't give you 5 seconds worth of airtime on this conversation, less than except to bring you up to snuff. This is national security. This is national security. Here's your memo. Here, get you a FISA warrant on this, Bob. Them motherfuckers is going down. You just mark it. Mark, put a check mark, put a check mark. The FISA court's got the dossier. There's a new dossier. There's a new dossier. Yeah, and this is the way to drain the swamp.
Right.
Because we wouldn't give you a nickel back for all this bullshit, for this ridiculous, inappropriate stock writing books. But you know, so everybody listen, you know something's up when Bob has to get somebody said a book that wrote the second part of a book that he didn't like the first time, to get somebody's version of it to talk about it. So you know something's bad wrong when he's got to get somebody's version that read Finnegan's Wake, that has seen Finnegan's Wake, that gives an outline of Finn and what the wake was all about, and then it might have been again, or the first time, or it might have been Finn again, we're not sure. Then we're going to have this talk about what James Joyce's modus operandi was for the wake in the first place. So it gives you a little heads up that something's afoot, you see. There's some Russia hookers waiting to take a piss somewhere. They're waiting to take a piss, just so you know. But the FISA court's all ready to look into every bit of it. So, yes, it's a great day. Good day.
Okay, so you're saying that Mueller, when he found out about that initial golden shower thing, he knew that he was screwed. That this was a useless project.
He knew something wasn't quite lined up.
Right.
Then Comey was right in there trying to lie about it and open it up, and then threatened Hillary, and then didn't threaten Hillary, and then said change the word so it wouldn't be a crime. He said, yeah, she's the worst person that ever walked on the face of the earth, but it don't really matter because she didn't win the election, so it's okay. What the fuck difference does it make? The sitting president of the United States of America has emails on a private server in Chippewa, New York State, that belongs to the sitting president in her bathroom. That's troublesome.
Mueller, why didn't he just stop it?
See why the intelligence agencies just love tapping your calls and your recordings and your stuff. Oh, they're blowing this through the Pentagon right now, Bob. Oh, God, he's start telling all this here. You want the pen name? You want the name that he used? Oh, is it the Silas Do Good letters all over again? Where is that Benjamin Franklin when you really need him? I need a good American to come and save the day. All these carpetbaggers running around here thinking they run something is pretty astounding. Yeah.
Okay, so why didn't Mueller shut it down?
He was too deep into it. He was too deep into it at this point. He didn't know what was going to happen. They were
anybody, anytime else, they just say dick. They say pussy. And the people just, oh, I need to resign. Yeah, so look at, what is that comedian, Frankenstein? Frankenstein. He was the big one. Al Franken.
Well, you touch people in the wrong way. Oh, yes, you're right. I better step in. He's walked away.
Well, shit, Trump did pat him on the pussy and bought him, paid hookers, had lawyers pay hookers. He had his fixer pay a hooker to keep her mouth shut so the National Enquirer could buy the story so it wouldn't run, so it wouldn't hurt his presidential run as he's coming down the escalator, and the motherfucker that he paid ends up in jail. His fixer ends up in jail. His fixer puts...
Well, what does Cohen think of the situation? What do these people think of this setup?
He's like, God damn, I thought I had this going and coming. I had the goods. I had the skills to pay the bills. I had the proof. I had the check stubs. I had everything else. And I was the one that damn went to prison. And go figure that one out. I got paid. And I'm the one that went to prison. So, yeah.
Okay, so... So how does when Mueller wakes up in the morning, what does he think? He said, fuck, I'm screwed for the rest of my life. What if they even let me live?
He's scared.
Is there scared, eh?
Very scared. Yeah. He's scared, and Trump's just laughing. Trump's had to, see, and that's the thing. Every time they say, now, there was impeaching. Now, Nancy Pelosi comes up and says, I don't want to impeach the sitting president of the United States. I want him in jail.
If y'all knew me as good as I did, I'd probably put me in jail too. I might as well go and turn myself in. Yeah, I probably will. But then you got to get a grand jury to indict me, and I could shoot them in the face, and I could still be elected president. So, yeah, I guess it's all right. I must have something's got me charmed.
You said this makes me look good. I wrote way back there, just after Trump got elected, that he was a shaman, a modern chief executive officer, CEO shaman. In terms of media ecology, the new magic is media ecology. He's actually a shaman of it.
Now, he's a shaman. No. He's a shaman because he's got no shame.
Yeah, right.
So he would be a shaman. He got no shame.
I can see that coming. But the thing is that he is pretty... on top of his game in the long run here of media magic, media manipulation. Okay, he's a shaman. Again, I write ahead of myself. I write stuff I don't even believe in, but I write it, put it out there. Turns out to be it was more accurate than anybody. Okay, so Matt Tarby says, maybe. So what's the maybe refers to? Never send a Marine to do a hitman's job. So he's saying, well, you know, you're saying... Wolf, you're saying that Mueller's a weak wimp, maybe, but the investigation as Wolf describes it seems plenty arrogant and stupid. In one scene, Mueller prosecutors Aaron Zelinsky and Jeannie Rhee sniff in Trump's metaphorical underwear drawer. So it says in the book, the two prosecutors, Zelinsky and Rhee, also delved into the president's personal life. How often did he cheat on his wife? With whom? How were trysts arranged? What were the president's sexual interests? So these prosecutors did that, and then points out this contradiction. With what Wolf describes as a prosecutorial embarrassment of riches to look at in Trump's past, in other words, he did all this evil stuff, or crooked stuff, bankruptcies, financial leisure domain, leisure main, dubious associations, and general sense of impunity, all that, why were these idiots looking at Trump's sex life? If they were looking at sex crime, that would be one thing. But infidelity? So they weren't investigating what they were supposed to be investigating, or thought they could get.
Well, they just started off, and then it's kind of like, just see what we can get into.
Right. They had nothing to do.
That's right. Basically.
Yeah. So they said, well, we got to spend our time, spend the $30 million, and so let's look into his love life. So,
Or his any life.
Right. Any life, right. It then says, Tybee says, it seems especially dim given that Mueller was concerned with avoiding the example of Ken Starr, who... Mueller believed, quote, undermined the office of the presidency. So Mueller's therefore conflicted on whether even to do a special prosecution, because he said the Ken Starr, White River, what was that, Clinton stuff? White, whatever it was in the middle 90s.
Whitewater.
Yeah, right. The Whitewater was it, undermined the office of the presidency. But, so he's pointing... Matt Taibbi is pointing out, well, maybe Mueller was stupid for allowing his people to look into this as trivial things. I think that's what he's trying to say. Then he says, Wolf spent a lot of time describing Mueller's ambivalence. Wolf's Mueller is frozen by the dilemma of charging a sitting president with obstruction of an investigation into an undiscovered conspiracy. Wolf writes, if that predicate event did not occur, could the president be fairly accused of obstructing justice? So Mueller really had a real catch-22 or an impossible situation. He could make the move of charging the president, but there was no crime.
Right.
And he figured that. So what did Mueller do during these 2 years? Did he start to get scared real early?
He just went on and on.
They had meetings and had nothing to say and said, okay, carry on, and we'll figure out when to give it up. And they took two years.
Okay.
All right, so...
spent a lot of money. Meanwhile, they were trying to get the goodie.
Does Mueller get some of the $30 million? Does he make money off this?
No, he'll get it off the other side.
What's the other side?
Off the back end of the fame.
Just a salary.
Yeah. Well, the gigs, the things coming, the things going, yeah. What's coming?
Okay, so they stretch it to keep the gig going, because after that he might not have any job, so keep this one going. Okay, Wolf writes, channeling Mueller, if that predicate event did not occur, could the president be fairly accused of obstructing justice? So that left Mueller frozen. Was Mueller frozen by that dilemma?
He was.
All right. So Wolf is correct on that point. Since Mueller, in the end, appears to have answered that question in the negative, Wolf, in his final pages, concludes that Mueller, took 2 years to decide to do nothing. Wolf even ends up agreeing with Trump's capsule description of Mueller. So apparently Trump delivered a scornful critique of Robert Mueller. Quote, what an asshole. Now, did Trump say that?
He did.
Right. And so then Wolf ends up agreeing with Trump's description of Mueller. So then Wolf says, after reporting Trump's statement, what an asshole, Wolf says, and there perhaps Trump had something of a point. If this was the result, a pass on conspiracy and equivocation on obstruction, how could you not have hastened it along, or worse, how could you have fostered the exact opposite impression? For 2 years, the secret tribunal had let the nation assume Trump's peril and guilt. They let the nation assume he was a very bad person, a traitor, working for Putin. How had it taken nearly 22 months to grill a nothing burger?
Right.
So that's what Trump is saying. And you're saying, though, Trump let them make fools themselves. That was part of the plan of his response.
Okay.
Like the Mueller report, Wolf's book is a Rorschach test. Readers will see in it what they want. If you want to revel in tales of Trump's narcissism and you're willing to buy the notion that everything or anything in the book is true, there's plenty in there. There's a hilarious scene, for instance, where Trump meets National Enquirer editor Dylan Howard and quizzes him about how much more copy he sells when I'm on the cover instead of just a celebrity. Trump asked the guy that question. Howard tells him 15 to 20% more. A few minutes later, Trump responds, so I sell 50% more than any of the movie stars? It's like I said, Howard replies and goes back to, no, 15 to 20%. Then Trump says, let's call it 40%. Okay, so that's supposed to indict Trump. Did that happen? Did Trump do that? It didn't happen.
Oh, he probably did. He probably did it. He probably did it, but it wasn't like that.
Yeah, it's like a joke.
Right.
Okay, so is Trump a narcissist?
You think? You ever ask him? There's never been a better narcissist than I am. I'm the biggest narcissist you've ever been. There's never been a bigger narcissist than I am. I don't know why you keep talking about this, because everybody knows. You look up narcissist in it, and there's my picture. The gold frame. You don't understand. And don't even get me started. I got nepotism and narcissism, because I came from the best family that ever was. I'm the biggest it's ever been, and I have the big hands with a nice large penis, too. Yeah, because of my narcissism, it's made my penis grow as well. Yeah, he thinks highly of himself, Bob, for sure.
Well,
and we're glad. We're thrilled. We're wonderful. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Isn't that part of the ascension process?
It would be.
He's not suffering from self-unworth. He doesn't think he's unworthy of whatever's being presented to us.
You damn Skippy. That's exactly right. He's on it. He's happy.
Okay. So the review ends with Tabby kind of bemoaning. He says, Trump does sell, but that's the problem. His saleability guarantees an endless stream of Trump content. And in brackets, which Trump himself is, of course, expert at turning to his advantage. Now, you're telling us, whoa, he's way more than expert at turning this content to his advantage. That's what you're saying here, right?
Yes.
But what's worse, says Matt Taibbi, is Trump mania has cartoonized the press landscape, leaving us, and he's a journalist, awash in endless piles of oversimplified pro and anti-narratives, and blind to better stories, like the one Wolf almost chose to write. So Wolf didn't even write. So Matt Taibbi, as a journalist, is shocked at the way his colleagues have fallen for all this shit and ruined the press and the public's eye. And
they were duped.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what Matt Taibbi really regrets about the Trump thing. So Wolf can be, so then he ends, Wolf can be a funny writer, and there are stretches of Siege, this second book, where he reaches for high comedy, describing Trump-Mueller as an epic struggle between corruption and inadequacy, with both sides, along with all of us, losing. Well, no, Trump, you're saying, is not going to lose.
Right.
Right, that side didn't lose. But Siege ends up mostly being a cheap catalog of half-believable rumors about who backstabbed whom and who slept with whom, interspersed with a lot of pretend outrage. So the author can market his book on MSNBC, that's the liberal side, even as he makes Steve Bannon out to be a genius. So he's appealing to everybody.
Well, right. Yeah, love me till you love me, and then when you get through, love me, and then you don't have to love me anymore because you already love me. You already told everybody that you love me, so that's all you really need, and then you already said. See, so the hit is important because the hit is about what you're talking about. The hit's what you're talking about, you see?
What's the hit?
The conversation, the chat, the up, the down, the over, under. You're still talking about Trump. Trump just says, he's an asshole, he's a motherfucker, he's a stomach. Yeah, you're still talking about me. That's just how narcissistic he becomes, yeah.
Okay. Wolf puts...
Pretty savvy.
Right. Pretty what? Savvy?
It's exciting.
It's exciting. Wolf puts halos... Okay, so Trump has been a big distraction for what we're doing. He has served us well. We couldn't have got to where we are today without him covering up. All right. Wolf puts halos on the people who talk to him and savages the ones who don't. And this is all pretty transparent. In the same way, some fast food restaurants have stopped bothering to make the cheese look real. Who cares? You'll eat it anyway. And we will, just like we did with his last book. So Zappa called it all cheese. Taibbi is agreeing with Zappa, it's just cheese. All right, so I think that was worth going through because you laid out a lot of hidden ground here. Is there some closing remarks before we end this special segment?
It's a wonderful day, Bob. It's to get the final zip code ready for Bobville. It's going to be a wonderful land to live in, and your president is doing a great job. He's making you set, getting you ready. He's making a nice, easy way so that the Monday Night Dead Bob crew can ease right on out. It's all good. It's a happy day. And it's good. We're going to miss them. We're going to send flowers. We're going to have to plant some flowers. You have to take your fertilizer and make flowers for all the dead people, Bob. It'd be good.
Wait, are you saying we're going to miss Trump?
No, we're going to miss all these little people that are feigning over him, that are falling away. Don't you worry. Go against Trump and see how it works out for you. Just say it. We promise. It'll be fun. We're watching. We love it. We think it's the most wonderful thing ever. It's delicious.
Well, does Trump... have some kind of historical destiny supporting him?
He's in the Revelation, Bob.
He's in there. And, you know,
he's in your
most people say that's bullshit, but
well,
okay, he's in
most
there.
Most people are going to be goddamn dead.
Okay,
yeah,
so if you're...
Yeah, you're in the grave complaining a little bit, but hey, we're going to have to run a string down, have a dead ringer, have a little bell, and have to get that coffin locked in the ground. Ring, 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 to be a dead ringer.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Good, good, good.
Okay, so you're saying that your words are go to anybody in a local salon in Mississippi or in Michigan, and he's complaining about Trump, he's going to go down too.
Gone. Yep, gone.
Wow. So you said we'll be able to ease off on Monday's Dead Bob show. That's Carolyn's medical show, for those who don't know.
Well, they're going to start dying. They'll just die, and it's good.
All right. We'll be outrun by the sickle of death.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's all good. It's all happy.
All right. Yeah, especially for those that didn't raise a hand against Trump. Happy days for them.
That's right. Happy days. And then you add a little beer back of Ascension in there. It makes it even better. So
Yes. All right.
It's
well,
all
that's
good.
Tremendous. Ion, thanks a lot for the great book review
welcome.
You did.
Delicious. What great fun. Good tidings of great joy. We are getting ready for a big week this week. It's a big, get your sound bites ready, Bob. It's going to be a fun one.
That's right. All right. Thank you very much.
Be well.
All right. Bye.